cheese was made by Mrs. Eliza Costain at Ballochrincolby in 1916. She had spent 3 weeks on a farm in Cheshire learning cheese making. Loose boxes were converted into storage for rows of 50-pound cheeses. The cheese was bought by grocers.
Because it was the old feudal system. It was a relic of the old feudal system in farming. We had the landlord, the tenant, and the worker, and everybody knew their place. It was a sort of a treaty, and people in one of those categories rarely moved up, sometimes moved down, but rarely moved up. And it wasn't, I don't think it was a very good system, really. It went on, of course, for many years, in as much as that I suppose in our lifetime, certainly in my lifetime, 85% of the men who farmed the land were tenants, and they depended on the landlord to give them the farm, to let them have the farm, and until we had tenant security in the Isle of Man in 1968 and 69, 30 or 40 years behind Britain. Until we had that, there's no doubt about it that there was this system of a hierarchy all the way through. The landlord seemed to inflict his power on the tenant, and the tenant inflicted his power on the workers.
And why was November the 12th so significant then? Was that just a convenient time of the year for the farming year to end?
Oh yes, I think so. It was just that mostly by then the potatoes were up, the crops, that was the last crop to come out of the ground. Everything was out of the ground except the green crop, the turnips. And if a man took a tenancy of a farm on November the 12th, he was generally allowed till, I think it was February the 12th, to get them off. But apart from that, the land was fairly bare. The livestock, the cattle and horses were all indoors for the winter time. They generally went in at the end of October, beginning of November, so it was a convenient time for that. It was a slack time on the farm, and a time when farmers could move from one farm to another if they had to, and when the men too could move from one farm to another too.
Now, you said a bit about the system of tenancy. So was there great movement then from farm to farm at Holantide?
Oh yes, as many as we'd have as many often as 15 farm sales at Holantide. Now we're lucky if we have two, and often they're not tied to Holantide anyhow.
But they were for farmers actually going out of farming, weren't they?
Well yes, for farmers going out of farming, but don't forget that in those days we'd have 1,200 individual farmers down to what, less than 700 today, and some of those are only part-time farmers. So. Things have changed a lot there. And of course, it was the time mainly as not only for farmers changing farms, but for the men and the maids. Don't forget there were lots of maids living in the farmhouses. You were talking a few moments ago about sitting here on each side of this room. Well, this was the old chalug. We've got the remains of the chalug here. If you open these cupboards, that's the old chalug, because this house goes back 450 years. These are the stone walls that you can see, the sheer thickness of them. And I'm determined, as long as I live, to keep it as it's been for many generations of farmers. I mean, we have generations and generations of farmers here. The only thing that strikes me at the moment is that the last three farmers in here have not had any family. but we haven't had any yet.
And the point you're making, Harvey, that there would have been men servants and maid servants here at Bulka Mountain?
Oh, yes. The room, the men could come into the room outside here without coming through the house. You can still see out the yard here if we go out. I can still show you where the old steps went up to the men's room, and there was no access from that room into the house. And it was only in recent years that we built up that doorway and put a window in and put access from the house. So a man, if he was that way inclined, went to the pub, he could come home without disturbing anybody. The men we had didn't seem to be that way inclined, and they often came in for supper before they went up there. But about 10 o'clock, the back door was locked, so if they came after 10 o'clock, well, they'd have their supper.
How would they come to be in a particular job then on a particular farm? How were they engaged?
Well, it wasn't a system that I liked very much because I know my uncle was a tenant farmer all this time, and it was only in the last year of his life that he was able to buy this farm. And he always had workers, well, even after he bought the farm, he did, of course, but he was inclined to, I suppose, it was done, everybody did it, inclined to inflict on the workers the same sort of discipline that the landlord put onto him. And I remember that, of course, the first hiring fair of the year was Michaelmas, the second Wednesday in October, held for some time immemorial, I think, at Michael. And often farm men would go there and hire, and then they would be fixed up. They knew where they were at the second Wednesday in October. They knew that they had a job when November the 12th came.
So it was almost like an agricultural labour exchange.
Yes, exactly. But not every man, certainly only about half of them would hire at Michaelmas. And my uncle, his men, and particularly the man who was with us for many years, the late Albert Sale, a great friend of the family in later years, he was with us 12 years. But my Uncle Jim McCubbin, he never said to him before Hollandtide morning, that's November the 12th, he never said to him, are you staying on? He'd leave it, and Albert never go to look for another job because he was quite happy, but he never knew when he got up on November the 12th where he was going to sleep that night. And he wasn't the only one. There were many like it, and that was the old system amongst farmers, and consequently it wasn't a very good system, and even then the wages they got were pretty poor, really. But on the other hand, the single men had a house, had a home, is somewhere to sleep, and they had good food. Most farmers provided good food. You talk about the pay, I've got a record here of one man we had on November the 12th, 1939. I recorded in my diary that Billy Kelly of Cloven Stones Cottage, Bodrine, he was hired at 16 shillings per week, that's 80 pence per week, with full board and insurance. And he was quite happy.
Yeah.
But you see, he was a, more or less an orphan, inasmuch that his mother had married again. He wasn't wanted at home. It was he had to have a home. So as a single man, farming suited him. We weren't by any means his only employers, because he travelled around several farms. In fact, the poor fellow, he was stone deaf, and he was killed on the road at Lonan some years ago. But he was one of the typical farm workers who went from farm to farm. I think he stayed with us 2 years, and then he decided he was moving on, and that sort of thing.
Well, I remember Billy Kelly, because I remember when I was working in Ballymenick with
right.
Kelly's, and we'd always meet him on mill days. Billy
yeah.
Kelly would often
yes.
be a man set to feed the mill, and I'd be maybe cutting on the board, and Billy would be feeding.
Yeah.
So I did know Billy
yes.
Kelly.
Connor. He was known
Connor,
as Connor.
That's yeah. right.
You know, he told me once how he got the name Connor. When he was a boy, he was always pretending to be a steam engine, and he was going chuk, 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 chuk. And when a steam engine goes downhill, it goes Connor, 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 because it hasn't held the back on the piston. So from then on, they called him Connor.
But the countryside was full of characters in those days, wasn't
yes.
it? I mean, and it was probably that system that you've just described probably bred these sort of characters, didn't it?
Yes.
Men who went about the countryside from farm to farm like that. There was a lot of them about. But it's interesting that you mention men being asked to stay on Hollandtide morning. And I must be right on the tail end of this system, because I can well remember working with Tom Kissick in Bonacross, and he would always say to me on Hollandtide morning, I take it you're staying on for another year.
Yes.
And that was still the tail end of that system.
But on the other hand, John, you weren't a hired man from, were you? Did you reckon to be a hired man?
Yes.
You were a hired man?
Yes.
Oh, well, you know what?
Oh,
yes
I was.
Mm.
And
yeah.
yes, that was quite an experience, that, looking back on it now.
Yes.
But farms changed hands as well, didn't they? And farmers moved on, and new farmers came in.
Yeah.
It was a great shifting time, wasn't it? Oh, yes. And yes. for that sort of job, you could hardly have had a worse time of the year, I suppose, with the dark nights and the short days.
True.
And farmers moved, I suppose, great distances in the island from farm to farm, and would all have been done within the space of maybe 1 or 2 days at the most, perhaps.
Oh, yes, yes. We moved here in 1938, Holmside 1938, from Ballabeg, from the farm which is now the site of the abattoir and the creamery, and we moved to Ballycullamartin here that year. And the thing I always remember about it was that we drove all the cattle, sheep and unbroken colts up Johnny Watson's Lane along the Balnard Road to Parkfield Corner. No traffic lights then, of course, but straight out through Glen Touchery Road, through Onken and up here. No problem at all. There were four lads all on bicycles, and I was in charge of them. I was just like John Wayne, moving a herd of cattle, and I was coming behind on the bike, shouting out orders. And we had one lad going on ahead, and his job was to shut garden gates. And every garden, every house had a garden with a wall around it, or a fence and a garden gate. None of the open plan estates. So it was no problem, and then we had two others riding herd on the side on bicycles. No problem bringing them through.
But the point would be, though, the people that you would meet on the road by way of traffic, and also those who lived along that road, would know what you were doing and would appreciate what your job was.
Right.
And that's not quite the same today, is it?
No. You wouldn't. I understand there's no law against it yet, except in Douglas, which made a law some time ago that you mustn't drive cattle through. But I've often thought that I'd like to drive a herd of cattle right through the middle of Onk and see what happened. Because there's nothing to stop you doing it, not by law. Want to join me?
You mentioned Holmside Fair. Where was the Holmside Fair held, Harvey? Do you remember the Holmside Fair being held?
Yes, I remember. It went on for a good many years after the war. I think it was during the 1950s it probably stopped. It was held latterly in a yard at the Adelphi Hotel. The Adelphi Hotel was down by the old police station just below Attle Street, and it was held there on November the 12th. I don't know much about the Michael one because that was outside my territory, but the men used to go into the hiring fair and on November the 12th, and hopefully by midday they would have got fixed up. But one of the most pathetic sights I ever witnessed, I was going down the hill, in the Whitebridge Hill here, from here, walking into Onken on the evening of Holmside Fair Day, November the 12th, and I met an old farm worker I knew coming up the hill, and he had all his worldly goods in a brown paper parcel, because in those days he hadn't a case or anything like that, but he had his best suit on, generally a blue serge suit to be worn in those days, blue serge suit, and he was carrying with him his hobnail boots, pair of working trousers, overalls maybe, and a clean shirt or two, and maybe a change of underclothes, and he had hauled all those, and he was coming up the hill, and he said to me, I haven't got fixed up. He said, I'm not fixed up. And he said, do you think your boss would let me sleep on the loft tonight? I've got nowhere to go. Because he was one of these men who was different, as Billy Kelly, dependent on having a regular job and a farm to go in. Well, he was getting to the evening of his life. I suppose in his 60s, he was slow, not the very best of men, but given a lifetime to various farmers. And I said, oh, yes, I'm sure he will. Go up and knock on the back door, and he let you in. So he stayed with us here for about 6 weeks, and he got his food, and he potted round, and in the end he did get a job, but he went on. But that was the sort of position that so many people were in. Mm. And even the married farm workers weren't a big lot better off. They were generally fixed up before Holmside because they had to have a house. But then, you see, they had to take a farm, they had to take a job where there was a house, and not every farm had a house. So often enough it was a case of taking a job because there was a home for themselves, and often big families in those days, and that's the way they had to always take a job, even if it wasn't the best one that was available. And of course I remember one member meeting a chap in Douglas who he went on to drive a baker's cart for the most of his life, and he used to come up here delivering bread, and he said, farming, he said, I loved it, he said. I did 1 year out in St. John's, John, not far from you. He said, I did 1 year of it, he said, out there, he said, and I loved every minute except for one thing. What was that? Spuds and herring, breakfast, dinner and tea. I stuck me ear, he said, because I'd taken me shill. I stuck the ear, but at the end of that time, I moved back into Douglas, and I never worked on a farm since.
Right. Now, when a farmer came to the end of his farming career and he was retiring, he would have a farm sale. And we've had one or two farm sales this year, but nothing like the crop of sales that there used to be. Even in my younger days, we would see maybe 12, 14, 16 sales at Hollantide. What memories do you have of notable farm sales, perhaps, that maybe you remember or that you attended, or the characters that actually attended those sales?
Well, of course, nowadays we drive there in our cars, and you just go there and park, and then when you've finished your business, you can go off home, and it's so easy. But I remember from here, and one would be just in the years after the war, when petrol was still scarce, and there weren't many vehicles of any sort. I remember going to a farm sale at the Barony, at Mackled, and walking to halfway house to get the electric tram, taking the electric tram to Ballajora, I think it was, somewhere, and walking out to the farm sale from there. But of course it was a day out for us then. And another thing, of course, was that when we got home, and the day was our own, we'd taken it off as a day off, and I wasn't buying anything, but I wanted to see the place, and see the farm, and see the life of the day. But when you could come home when you were ready, you didn't have any work to do. But nowadays it's also changed that if you do go to a farm sale, you're there for a couple of hours, 3 hours, and then you've got to come home to do the fixing up and the work at night. So times have changed a lot in that respect.
Well, you do describe it so aptly, Harvey. That's exactly what it was. It was a day out, wasn't it? It was a social event. You went to see the farm, to meet the people who were there, and to discuss the farming topics that related to everybody there, and
yes,
that was the great thing about it.
Yeah, and we used to get a cup of smoked coffee. There was always a man that from the auctioneers who used to stoke. He had boilers, you see. It was old Jimmy from Crystals, and he used to get go around collecting wood to stoke up the fire, and he'd get it going, and he got this fire going, a big pot or something on it, and he made this coffee, and it was terrible stuff. But he went a long way from home, and nowadays, as I say, nobody's more than half an hour away from home, so they can go home for a meal. But in those days it was a full day, so we had that and two buns, not unbuttered, too stale. Well, they would be fresh enough, but and by goodness, you devoured them because you were hungry.
You really do. I can't help but laugh, because I'm remembering the same man on the same occasion, and you would look to see where the thawking of smoke was going up, and so that you would know where the coffee was. And
yes.
I remember, Jimmy, do you remember those mugs that he used to have?
Yep.
Yeah, they were dreadful things, weren't they? All shapes and sizes, with all sorts of printing on them, whatever they were.
I'm told they're still stored somewhere. Yes, I was doing an article some time ago on crystals, on them reaching a certain anniversary in their lifetime, and I was told that the mugs are still there, so if we ever start some farm sales on the old scale again,
the mugs are ready.
The mugs are ready.
But they were characters themselves, weren't they? I mean, one of the most respected personalities in farming in my time, or two of them, which was Fred and Turner Crystal.
Yeah.
They were great men in the agricultural scene, weren't they? And
yeah,
they, I suppose it was fair to say that there were other auctioneers indeed, but Fred and Turner Crystal would probably conduct the majority of the farm sales.
Oh, yes, yes. And you talk about the big sales, but there were smaller sales too. Because I remember a neighbour of ours, he's dead now, his wife is dead, and his son is dead, so there's no secrecy about it. There was no secrecy about it in any case, but he was William Kermode, who farmed at Beleg, a little 60-acre farm over here. He was a tenant farmer, and the day came when he decided to give up farming. And the farmer sold, but he didn't want it, the son didn't want it. And it was about this time of the year, Hauntide, and it was a dreadful morning. I'd been helping him, I'd been sorting the sheep and the cattle, and I went over to help, and about 10:45, and the sale was due to start at 11, there was hardly a soul on the place. And I thought, here's a man, I said to Fred Crystal, I feel sorry for Willie Kermode. He's come now to the end of his days. It's the last thing, last sale he'll have, the last money he'll ever have in. And I said, there's very few people. Looks as though you're going to have a poor sale. And Fred Crystal said to me, don't worry. It only takes two men to put a price up. And by 11 o'clock, I suppose there were a couple of hundred people there, and he had a very good sale. But what I was going to say, it was 1961. I remember the year well. And he stayed on the farm for a bit because the chap that bought it didn't want to move in for the time. And he stayed in for a little while. And Willie Kermode came over the field. There's a track next farm to here. So he came over the field and he was waving this thing in his hand and he said, look at that. He said, £2,000, he said. £2,000. And that was for his stock and his implements. But it was wonderful in those days, 1961. He said, I'm never going to work again. He said, you're fools, he said. Well, he went into Douglas. He'd been left a house by an aunt, so he had somewhere to live. And he went in, and it was just at the start of inflation.
Yeah.
Because the very next winter, he was up here looking for a job thinning turnips.
Right.
He said, you can't live. He said, I can't live from what I've got.
Right. But we mentioned Fred and Turner Crystal there, and as I say, there were other auctioneers, certainly in my time. I can remember Arnold Callan selling for Isle of Man Farmers, and
yeah.
Eric Howe selling for Central Marts in his day. Perhaps you can go back maybe a bit further than that. Can you remember the auctioneers of a day previous to that?
Well, of course, contemporary with the ones you mentioned was Raymond Riley.
Oh,
Raymond was
of course.
Yes, Raymond was a good auctioneer,
yes,
and he conducted a lot of sales.
Now, Raymond Riley, over Riley's door, there's a name of an auctioneer from
That's
a
right.
day gone by, isn't there? Just top of Queen Street, in,
well,
just on Riley's...
Yes, J.T. Farragher. J.T. Farragher, yes. Well, that was Raymond's father-in-law, wasn't it? Yes,
right.
Father-in-law, that's right.
Yes.
Yes, that's right. Anyhow, no, grandfather-in-law, his Raymond's father was Jack Riley. And he was an auctioneer too, and he'd taken over from his father-in-law, who was John Thomas Farragher. And one of the things he, Raymond used to tell me, even in his younger days, he remembered that they kept a stable there where the farmers came in and put their horses when they came into town on the Saturday afternoon, and they would stay there till 10 or 11 o'clock, some of them till the pub was shut, others till they felt to go home. Because if you didn't go to the pubs, you walked backwards and forwards through Strand Street and met on Boots Corner, got all the news, because we had no television, radio, no Manx radio then, good heavens, no. So nothing there. But anyhow, yes, he was. And of course, before that, there was an auctioneer called Arthur Dick, who was very good. He was exceptionally good. And he sold at all three marts, because the three marts were going full board in those days. Ramsey on the Mondays, Alisal on a Tuesday and St John's on a Wednesday.
Yes. Well, they were great days, Harvey, and quite honestly, I could sit here talking for hours and hours, but our tape is starting to run out, but it is marvellous to reminisce. And I think some people criticise us for looking backwards, but really, if we look back, it teaches us who we are and how we became what we are, and history is very, very valuable. And I think some of the things that you've described here in Hollantide's past and in farming past really are the things that made farming what it is in the Isle of Man today. It's moved on a long way since then, hasn't it?
Yes. Oh, yes, yes. Another thing I remember is that on a Saturday night, there would be 18 young boys and girls getting off the bus on a Saturday night, all getting a living on farms around here.
Right.
Now I suppose there's about three or four of that age.
Do you regret that age has passed, Harvey? Do you wish that we could have, or what do you think we should have retained from that age that we haven't got anymore?
Well, some of us are very lucky, we've still got good neighbours, but I think the spirit of neighbourliness has gone in some areas. It's still here. I mean, I could always call on one of my neighbours and do often have to if I'm in trouble, but Really, we miss the old mill days. I first met you at the mill day, John, over
right.
in Ballymanock,
that's
a couple
right,
of years ago.
We did.
We miss those. Those were great days,
yeah.
And things like that that I do think is obviously missing from our lives today.
Well, Harvey, it's been marvellous talking to you. I've looked forward to this interview for some time, so thank you very, very much for taking the time and sharing it with us.
Okay.
Well, now we stop for a commercial break.
You may well have been struck by place names on the island and wondered what they mean. How did they come to be called that? Even the origins of Manx personal names. Well, I'll be trying to explain some of these mysteries each day on Manx Radio. At 10:30 in the morning, 1:30 in the afternoon, and 10:30 at night. So join Manx Radio's Island Guide and explore with me some of the names around us, here on the Isle of Man.
The Sagar Tandoori offer you the opportunity to enjoy mouth-watering Indian dishes complemented by the wine of your choice from their large selection. And if you're thinking of something different for Christmas or New Year, book now for your party and enjoy their special Christmas menu. The Sagar Tandoori Restaurant, Summerhill, Douglas.
The Legion Players present a story of war, a story of survival, but above all, a story of hope. The Diary of Anne Frank lets a young girl's free spirit speak across the decades. Presented in association with the Friends of the Gaiety, The Diary of Anne Frank is on for 3 nights only, from the 16th to the 18th of November at the Gaiety Theatre. Make a date in your diary for the Legion Players production of The Diary of Anne Frank. It's Christmas time. You can have a lot of this, but wouldn't you rather have more of this? Copies of all this year's TT races are available from Manx Radio. Ideal gifts for the true TT fan. Full race commentaries. All the thrills and action can be yours by simply calling Manx Radio on 66 10 66. So for TT memories, Manx Radio have got it taped. Call 66 10 66 today.
And now we go to Mary for her report from Central Mart's and the prices that were obtained there last Wednesday.
Hello, John. Well, this is a report from the auction held last Wednesday at St. John's. We have had, again, a busy week. There were 149 cattle sold, Continental Cross suckled bullocks from 230 to 300 kilograms were making from 270 to 372 pounds, and suckler heifers from 215 to 310 kilos were making from 260 to 235 pounds. Hereford Cross store bullocks from 435 to 460 kilograms were making from 452 to 494 pounds, and Charley Cross heifers from 370 to 425 kilograms were making from 374 to 470 pounds. Friesian bullocks 280 to 320 kilos were making from 230 to 310 pounds. There were four suckler cows in with calf at foot, and they made from 600 to 660 pounds. There were 12 calves this past week. A Charley Cross bull made 256 pounds. Charley heifers were 202, and Friesian bulls were selling up to 105 pounds. There were 61 sheep sold. Two shear ewes were making from 44 to 52 pounds, and store lambs were from 33 to 35 pounds. A Polden Vale cattle handling race made 160 pounds, a tombstone barrier 48, and a foot bath 25 pounds. Thanks, John. Speak to you next week. Bye.
Well, thank you very much, Mary. And now, just to remind you, that on November the 29th, Wednesday, November the 29th, at the Gaiety Theatre, there will be a show called Characters from the Countryside, I think, and some of the notable personalities in the farming scene on the Isle of Man will be putting on a show there in aid of the Agricultural Benevolent Trust. Make a date, that's Wednesday, November the 29th, and tickets are obtainable through the normal booking facilities at the Gaiety Theatre.
Broadcasting from Douglas in the Isle of Man, this is Manx Radio.
Shaw, Radio Vanni.